Welcome to In the Studio, a 21st century perspective on history's greatest rock albums. I'm Redbeard, and today in the studio, it's the anniversary of the biggest selling Aerosmith album ever.
I remember for the whole winter, I would sit around and think about when the carnival was coming to town. And when it was in town, all I wanted to do was spend as much time at the carnival as possible. And, you know, that wanting to go to the carnival and live in the carnival changed to music.
And, you know, let's face it, you know, we're living a dream. You know, we're living the American dream. We're really fortunate enough to play this out. We're living a dream, you know, thinking about reality. So you don't get caught up in the trappings. Oh, it's amazing. And send a prayer for the desperate hearts
in aid. Desperate hearts. Hey, this is Joey Kramer.
And Joe Perry.
Tom Hamilton.
Brad Whitford.
And Steven Tyler. And you'll be listening to Radio Free Aerosmith.
We're in the studio. Years ago, this month, the rock world was in awe of Aerosmith. This band of shipwreck survivors had seen their vessel crashed against the rocks in the early 80s, only to gather their rock and roll resolve to make back-to-back classic hit albums, 1987's Permanent Vacation and 1989's Pump. But could they really sustain that level of creativity with a third jewel in a triple crown? That question was answered in no uncertain terms by the release of Get a Grip, the biggest selling album in Aerosmith's long storied career, and the first ever to debut at number one. Completing the hat trick with Get a Grip showed an increase in the reliance on the fertile songwriting duo of Aerosmith's Joe Perry and Steven Tyler, who joined me in the studio, along with Aerosmith guitarist Brad Whitford, bass player Tom Hamilton, and drummer Joey Kramer. But all of the members of Aerosmith agree that the real magic doesn't happen for them until they play live for fans. Joe Perry starts us off in the studio.
Yeah, well, it's like the other half of the equation, you know. It's like the it just starts to flow. It's like there's just a circuit that happens, some kind of magic. And when the band's rocking, it just starts to feed into the audience. The audience starts to give it back to us. Yeah, we've been noticing that when we're rehearsing. You know, I can really feel the band rocking, and it really feels good. But it's the other part of it that it really needs to be there, you know.
And that's the audience.
It's right. like being a zookeeper, and the lions have been, they haven't had their steak all day, you know, and they're like, arr, arr, and they feel that in the building, you know, and when it gets right down to that time, it just feels like it's feeding time, that kind of just insanity, you know.
It's like living cyberpunk, man. You can, cyberspace, you scream into the microphone, it goes down the wire out into the speakers, and you get 30,000 people screaming back, living on the edge, and it's just, it turns into a loop, like a guitar feeding back.
I'll tell you, one advantage is that you can be sick as a dog, you know, with the temperature of 104, but you go on stage and, you know, that audience being there, there's something about it that your body doesn't let you feel that way anymore, so... It's a good 2-hour cure for whatever ails you.
There's something wrong with the world today. I don't know what it is. Something's wrong with our eyes. We're seeing things in a different way. And God knows it ain't his. It sure ain't no surprise. Yeah! We're living on the edge. The light bulb's getting dim. There's meltdown in the sky. If you can judge a wise man by the color of his skin. And Misty, you're a better man than I.
Living on the Edge was the first song and the first video that was released from from Get a Grip. It's serious lyrics, quite a contrast to lead-off singles like Dude Looks Like a Lady or Love in an Elevator. Stephen, how has becoming a rock and roll daddy affected some of the topics you choose to cover and your perspective on those topics?
A rock and roll daddy. Rock, well, for God's sake,
I've been a daddy for an awful
for so
long time. It's got nothing to do with that.
So long. I don't know. We were in a studio and we were writing with Mark Hudson and came up with Living on the Edge. And my first thought was, let's not get too serious with it. So we decided to take the piss out of it a little bit. And, if you know, tell me what you think about your situation, aggravation, complication is getting to you. If Chicken Little told you that the sky was falling, even if it was, would you still come crawling back again? I know you would, my friend. You have again and again and again.
Joe Perry, where were the songs for Get a Grip born?
Bowen?
Bone.
In the boneyard. Where else?
Well, all over the place, I guess, you know, because we wrote some of them. We wrote in a lot of places. We wrote it in Longview Studios and at Rick Tinnery's studio up in Cohasset and in all of our houses and our studios in our houses. And we wrote a lot of stuff at my house in Vancouver, in L.A. So it was all over the place. We had, you know, a batch of tapes and cassettes and work tapes. And we wrote, you know, we rehearsed a lot at Joey's house. And we must have demo tapes that would fill this room. We're in a room about 20 by 30 and 7 foot high ceiling, and it would be full of demo tapes.
You're strong, wanna fight? Well, come on and line up.
Joey, Tom, Brad, when you heard this rough demo come out of the Boneyard or Steven's writing studio, did you pick up on the flavor? What was the flavor if you had to put your finger on it, Tom?
It was the Aerosmith energy, you know, that it really comes from that. You know, it starts with just kind of a desire to put out high energy music, you know, and it takes different forms and different chords and different beats, you know, and different notes. And, you know, we've been, you know, our music has been built around that for so long, you know, that when one of us hears a demo or something, we can tell if that element is in it. You know, there's another element, you know, there's the energy element and the rhythmic part of it, you know, because this band is one thing that's different about us than a lot of other bands is that we're really into the groove and the rhythm of what we're doing. And a lot of it really has to start there before anything else, you know, before it's right enough to add anything else to it. And then there's the melodic part of it, and the melodic part of it only works if there's the attitude part. Mm. You know, it's got to come from an angle that's different than most music that we hear. So all those things have to get together.
The melody then definitely it doesn't always come first. Sounds like the groove or a jam really sometimes spawns the song.
I would say in the old days I used to listen to the band tapes and just put my headphones on in whatever hotel we were at and just, you know, go for it right then and there. That's where I'd come up with the melody lines and the lyrics.
First thing that happens is the amp gets turned up to 10.
Well, you got to start somewhere, right, Joe?
Leben.
Yeah. Leben. L-E-B-apostrophe-M.
Right.
Leben.
Well, that's the stuff you can count on, you know?
Friend of mine, the tables have turned. Yeah, calls me and then where's that party? That kind of love was the killing kind. So listen. You
The Aerosmith song Crying went to number 12 in 1993, but the video won 3 MTV Video Awards, launched the career of actress Alicia Silverstone, and was voted the number one all-time favorite by MTV viewers in 1993. Next, Steven Tyler, Joe Perry, Tom Hamilton, Brad Whitford, and Joey Kramer of Aerosmith all return with me to discuss the creative kiss of death and foaming at the mouth. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with the guys from Aerosmith, the number one seller, Get a Grip.
Hey, this is Joey Kramer.
And Joe Perry.
Tom Hamilton.
Brad Whitford.
And Steven Tyler, and you'll be listening to Radio Free Aerosmith.
You're in the studio.
Get a Grip album, which debuted at number one in April 1993. I'm Redbeard. And prior to this album, Aerosmith had released two of their best efforts and bestsellers back-to-back, Permanent Vacation in 1987 and the five-star Pump album in 1989. I asked Aerosmith guitarist Brad Whitford what motivated Aerosmith to stay out of a creative slump on Get a Grip.
I think that we're just still that hungry.
How do you keep that?
I don't know. I don't know what it is, but it's something that burns. You know, it's like, foaming at the mouth all the time and just really being excited and really passionate about what we do. You know, we still are. That's where it's at. That's that place that you get to that you can't describe with words what music does and creates for you, and that high that only a few people get to taste. We're hooked.
Yes. And also, we don't really have all that much money, contrary to popular belief. So there's
we got to keep working.
There, you know.
I think that this the premise kind of right from the beginning of Get a Grip was more, I got a vibe from Steven and Joe right away as soon as we started hearing some of the demo tapes of where it was going as far as the feeling of it being not in the direction of Permanent Vacation or Pump, and that was the question, where is it going to go? And I mean that was what the question was after it's kind of started, but the first vibes that I got from the whole thing and listening to the songs in the beginning was that I definitely got that we were bringing it back to the streets, we were getting further back into our roots, and that was something that I really really started getting off on.
No. We're really selfish, man. We got to feed the beast within us before we go out there and try to please somebody else. It's always been a magic thing for us,
You can get out there just so far, and then you have to kind of know, when to bring it back. And when you bring it back, where do you bring it back to? You can't do the same thing that you've already done. But, when you've gone out so far, when you come back to repeat something, there's really no way that you can do it the same.
Pearl.
was the first song that got the Get a Grip album started, you think?
Eat the Rich.
I remember.
No, it wasn't.
It wasn't. It wasn't
for,
not for me. When I got the flavor, it was Fever.
Fever.
Joe had this track he put down in his basement, and I felt the groove. It was a marriage between a ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch and an all fours. And it was something some of the early blues people did. And we were trying to figure out how to do that and make it work. And we clicked on it, and we got that groove. And if you listen, it's a push-pull. But that was it. And I can just remember running down this road in the back of my house with the headphones on, as I did with the last two albums, and saying, this is it. This is what... And, you know, we base it on what we want to play on the road. You know, when I go into my fantasy world, I picture myself in front of all these people. What would I like to be delivering to them? What's the song du jour? What's the flavor of the year? And this was it. This is it. And it kind of was the definitive Aerosmith vibe for me. You know, we always want to keep going back to the rougher side that we haven't shown anybody. A lot of people have seen our hits, you know, but we have this inside thing of Aerosmith that's like the B-list stuff, you know. And that was one of them. I mean, Fever is like, you know, Fever may be hell and a cross to bear. As long as I'm in heaven, honey, I don't care. And it's that feeling, you know, that blows it out there.
Fever, the first song that set the pace for what would become their biggest album ever in a career that has spanned four decades. In a moment, Steven Tyler, Joe Perry, Tom Hamilton, Brad Whitford, and Joey Kramer all return to reveal what's kept them going so long. Why Aerosmith bucks conventional wisdom by all playing together live in the studio when recording. And why true democracy in a band would never work. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Aerosmith. Get a grip.
Hey, this is Joey Kramer.
And Joe Perry.
Tom Hamilton.
Brad Whitford.
And Steven Tyler, and you'll be listening to Radio Free Aerosmith.
You're in the studio.
And I'm Redbeard, Get a Grip, which debuted its first week at number one on the sales chart. Truly amazing, since their preceding album, Pump, had broken all previous sales records for the band and was universally acclaimed critically as well. To date, Get a Grip has sold in excess of 20 million copies worldwide. That's amazing.
There are people who will advise you in your career to please make Son of Pump or Pump 2. You obviously didn't go that route. Why not?
Because it's the kiss of death.
Why
is it? To go back and repeat your past. Somebody came in when we were doing Permanent Vacation. We were easing into Pump. And we had this meeting where Joe and I had the ideas about what instruments to play, you know, kazoos and tribal things. And somebody said, well, you got to have another dude. You got to have another. All you could hear was a door slamming and there were taillights. That guy was the hell out of there. And so, I mean, that's where it's at, you know. We think it's the kiss of death to go back to stuff.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, there's this corporate tendency when they've had a band that's made a couple of successful records. They're not about to stand by and let the band screw up the third one, you know?
Yeah, let's not trust the band.
It's really hard.
Heaven forbid, let's not trust the band.
It is very hard to go in there and just play. You have to learn how to wade through it. It's like wading through a swamp. And that was one of the hard things about doing this album, and it took twice as long as the last album, but that's what had to happen for us to come through that with something that we wanted to put out.
I think really the answer to that is that there are really only five people that really understand what this band is about. There are a lot of other people that think that they do, you know, but the essence of that is right here, and that's what it's about.
And when the time comes and people put their two cents in, you know, we still stay open. I think that's one of the secrets, too, to Aerosmith, is that we stay open, we listen, we take what we need, and we leave the rest. It's not always a pretty process, but we manage through it.
Tired of a living a lie. I was wishing that I would die.
When you're recording master tracks, when you're doing takes in the big studio, how many band members of Aerosmith are playing at one time?
Everybody. And we usually get it in two or three takes. That's been this record was pretty fast.
Most rock and roll bands don't play at least their basic tracks all together in the studio. Albums, as you guys know, have not been made the way you make albums for a long time. And I was just curious as to why you do it. Why do you all play live together in the studio? And
there's another way. Why would anyone do it any other way than that? Yeah.
That's what
the band is about, man.
There's like a sixth. You know, we're sitting in a recording studio right now, but there's something that goes down on the tape. You don't know, like, it's not tangible. But there's something that goes down on there that you create, mm-hmm. that energy or the magic, that it goes onto the tape. Mm-hmm. There's not a fader for it, but, you know.
It's like trying to explain why the old shoe fits.
You know, but it's there. And it only happens when you're loose and you're finely tuned machine. You can, you're playing it. You got it down. It's happening. You play it. You lay it down. And, like, you know, when you get this, you get magic. And then you push it a little more. Sometimes you get that real special one. And in fact, we've been playing together so long, we can get there a lot easier now. That's the beauty about having a band like this.
It really goes back to our first album. I remember one thing about that experience was that we would work really hard to get everything right, but when we got into the recording studio, the takes that we chose were not necessarily the ones that were perfect, but the ones that had the fire. And, you know, we learned right there, and we've always gone on that in order to get those takes that have the fire, it takes the whole band in there recording it, usually. You know, there's a lot of bands that'll go in and they'll start a click track and record the guitars, and then a couple of weeks later, they bring the drummer in.
A common fallacy among weekend warrior musicians is that bands that stick together as long as Aerosmith has must be a pure democracy, with each member having equal creative say. Aerosmith bass player Tom Hamilton, a cancer survivor, says that's simply not realistic.
One of the things about everything that we've been through is that I think maybe we all accept the fact that you know, everybody having exactly the same say in every situation is a fantasy. And you're right, that's not democracy. That's like something that's like synthesized that's not true, because that's not the way the world is. In any given situation, there's going to be a different kind of hierarchy. And yeah, everybody puts in their two cents, and there is a consensus. In certain situations, the weight goes one way or the other. And I think the thing now, you know, myself, just, you know, as a bass player, you know, sometimes I used to wonder, why don't I get my picture taken as often as Steven? Why don't I, you know, get this and that the same way Joe does or somebody else in the band?
And the radio interviews and magazine interviews.
The thing is that the fact that, you know, I'm a lot more confident and comfortable in my position as, you know, playing the bass and playing a supporting role, that you know, acceptance and, you know, loving that contribution to the band makes the band work better. And I think everybody has gotten closer to that point. And so, you know, we function a lot better for that reason.
Brad, straighten me out, but I understand that you have a lot of input into the videos of Aerosmith?
It's kind of like this. Everybody has their say, and when they finally agree with me, then we move ahead. Talk to me and seem to hypnotize. They say the things nobody dares to say, and I'm not about to let you fly away. My lover with no jet lag was staying up all.
Horses Are Wild is a song that was recorded during the Get a Grip sessions but left off the album. It first surfaced on the Beavis and Butthead Experience soundtrack in 1993. Now you can find it on the Aerosmith Gold 2-disc set. I'm Redbeard. We'll be back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guests, the guys in Aerosmith. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2018, all rights reserved. Transcription by Jane Carpenter Brune. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.